Why are they doing this? They said when you got here, the whole thing started. I think you're the cause of all this. I think you're evil. Evil!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Monsters, John. Monsters from the It.
A fire thaw! A fire thaw! A fire thaw!
Swallow this.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Have you ever heard of Candyman?
You moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you?
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
You don't know what death is.
This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation.
I'm the messenger of God. You do need to stay here.
God is dead!
Satan lives!
It's alive, Luke. It's alive! It's alive!
The animals are contagious. What fire? Stop! You have no idea!
You're not afraid of the dark, are you?
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying. Hallelujah.
You'll see me in hell, Mr. Thorne. There will be a shower out of sentries.
I can't lie to you about your chances, but you have my sympathies.
This little procedure is called making a head of a mistake.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
There is no one watching out for us, Meryl. We are all on our own.
And there's no more room in hell than the dead who walk here.
The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Something in the middle. Shut the doors, my God. You gotta tell them. Silent Breed is people.
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am your co-host tonight, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire, U.S. of A. And with me, I have a special co-host today, a new guy. I know you from a writer's group, and why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi. Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is Abram Spinney. I am a blogger and a writer. I own a small blog called A Realer Movie Reviewer. I've had the blog for about a year and a half. And if you are curious about any of my opinions on current movies or past media events, go ahead and check it out.
And how do you spell that?
Realer, R-E-E-L-E-R.
Okay, very good. And there's a thing about your first name. Why don't you let everybody know how you got the name Abram?
Oh, yeah. When I was born, my parents were debating on what they wanted to call me. And eventually, my mother decided that, you know, she would settle for Abram. A combination of the name of Bram Stoker, actually. Ironically, though, she learned later that it was the same name of in Hebrew as well.
yeah, exactly. So, his name is, I think, really Abraham, and he went for with Bram, and so your folks decided to go with that, and that was kind of cool. So your mom must be a big fan of the Dracula novel.
Oh yeah, yeah. He named my brother Quentin after a character in Dark Shadows.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. The werewolf, I believe, is Quentin.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the television show, but I do know that, yeah, it's vampires and werewolves in it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Big from the 60s and 70s, I think.
It was around there, too. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the exact date, but it was an old show. I mean, my God.
Yeah, they made a terrible a movie of it a year or two ago, right?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I don't remember. I don't understand why. Why?
Yeah. Right. All right.
Went stains my mind.
Now, Abe, I didn't know this until I started following your blog, and I started following your blog because you told me about it at Writers Group, and I saw that you did reviews on all genre stuff, as you've mentioned, and one of the things that interested me was anime, and I saw that you had done some reviews on School Days, which was interesting.
The infamous harem anime that quickly nosedived in the last episode, yep.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a ride.
Now, the folks who don't know what anime is, it's basically cartoons of Japanese stories. Can be any genre. A good portion of them are science fiction, horror, and they're basically live action animation versus a graphic novel and manga. Is a graphic novel, am I right?
It's between a graphic novel and a comic. Some people seem to have different opinions about that. I always consider them comics in a way, because it's just different because they're usually in black and white and they're read from right to left instead of left to right, like books in here in the U.S. It's the opposite direction when you read them.
Because I don't know why that is. I assume Japanese is read the opposite way than a lot of the European languages, I guess.
Yeah, because we're used to starting from the left page to the right page, but in Japan, their books and the manga start from the opposite.
Okay, so it's similar to Arabic, I guess, because Arabic is that way as well.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, before we get into the specific topic, let's just discuss a little more about this in general. Now, how did you get into anime and manga and whatnot, and are you a big fan, or are you just pick and choose here and there, and that's why, you did a review on School Days?
I'm in between. I really enjoy it, but I'm not a super fan like some people are. I find the ones that just snag me, and School Days, when I decided to do a review on it, was its infamy. Like, people all over the internet start talking about it because how it turns out. And my curiosity got piqued in that. Then again, it also had to do with the fact that anime has a cultural element and also the unique imagination that I find really appealing. There's a lot of unique series that sometimes integrate their own Japan's culture. Or sometimes even other cultures, and they come up with some really interesting results.
Even though you said they're in a style of comics in a way, their stories are long, right? I mean, they're like books. A lot of them, some of them are multiple books, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, some of these can go on for a long time. There are some that started in the 90s and still haven't finished.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. There is the one of the biggest names, and there is Berserk. It is a dark fantasy epic. It started in the early 90s, and it's still going, even now. It also has to do with the fact that the author publishes at a very irregular schedule.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, for these animes and such, I mean, some people in the United States, at least in the United States, back in the 70s and 80s, there were a few that were actually pretty popular in the United States for the Saturday afternoon cartoons or after-school cartoons. And, for example, Star Blazers and Shogun Warriors were the big ones that ran in between the Scooby-Doos and all that on the reruns on Saturday afternoons and after school and on the local UHF stations. Thing is that they're still going on now, and a lot of times people forget that these things are short lengths. In other words, there's a lot of them, although, like you said, Berserk, for example, that one, especially the manga, I guess, continues forever and ever. But the television shows, besides a handful of them, most of them are over in 12 to 13 episodes, and then sometimes 26 or maybe a few longer than that if they go 4 or 5 years. But usually they're only 1 to 2 or 3 seasons, right?
Yeah. The average, yeah. But there is the epic, the big ones, the big names, still go on for a long time. They're especially in the shonen genre, which focuses on young adults most of the time.
Okay.
And their series can go up to 50 volumes. And the animes can go on for hundreds of episodes.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. One big name in the shonen genre is Naruto, and there's also One Piece, and they've gone on, they're still going today. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of episodes. It is incredible, I mean, how long some of these go, but that also really is how long a series can go on for. Partly is because of either how well known the series is, how long the manga is. Or, you know, how, you know, and budget as well. I mean, like, you know, some series can only go so far if they can keep up, stay behind the manga. Because one thing I've noticed, is that when, a manga is running and the anime is, the anime sometimes has to stay a few steps behind the manga, otherwise it overtakes it. And goes ahead of the story and screws up the schedule. And this animes get stretched out with filler stories, which are not really canon, but they're there to keep the series going and let the manga catch up, because it takes longer for the author to get some chapters out and a volume before he releases a volume than it is for a studio to create an episode.
One that we're going to talk about today was actually. The last 6 episodes were made because it actually passed the manga, is what I read.
Yes, exactly.
So that you could argue or say isn't really canon, because the manga thing went on for many years after, with additional stories, and really went into the background of what really is going on, because there's a lot of things that are unexplained in the anime anyway. Now, what is the topic that we're going to do? Even though the folks have probably read the episode liner notes and whatnot, what is the anime that we wanted to discuss tonight?
Gantz.
Right. Yeah. G-A-N-T-Z.
No one knows who made it. No one knows who sent it. It can be seen only by the chosen. And it chooses who lives and dies.
It's still going, right, as a manga, in other words?
Actually, it's finished.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, it actually finished, if I can remember the date, it was, it started from in July 2000 and ran till June 2013.
Oh, wow. So it just ended then?
Oh yeah, I was actually shocked too when I found out.
Now the anime itself, that was came out in Japan, I think in 2004, was it?
Yes, actually, and it started from in April of 2004, and then it ran to I believe June. So that was the first season.
Okay, and then I guess its popularity, they went in for a second season, I guess, right?
Yes, but as you said, it overtook the manga, and that's kind of caused some problems right there.
Right. Now, people say, all right, well, you know, why are we discussing our cartoons and whatnot? The thing is that a lot of these cartoons are, I guess, R-rated, right? So the rumor is, or I guess the stereotype is that they actually can be X-rated, right? Because of the henties and all that. And you
know, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of them can get pretty raunchy.
But the big animes, a lot of the more popular ones that are focused on young adults to the 20-year-olds and up to 30, 35, whatever, or just genre fans in general, are usually R-rated, right? So, you know, like whatever you would see in a R-rated film in the United States, you could arguably see in these animes, right?
Oh, yeah. It's Japan's very different censorship than we do. Like, a dismemberment and a lot of blood and women in scantily clad clothing is, to them, not as bad as some of the levels like Gans goes to. But if we were to look at it in our broadcasting system, we would see this automatically an R rating, you know?
Right. So what I've noticed is like, for example, let's use Gans as an example. Gans's level, even it's like we said, at least R-rated, but a lot of television shows like Game of Thrones and True Blood, things like that, have the dismemberment, the blood, the gore, the scantily clad people, whatever. And you compare Gantz to, say, that level of age group, I guess, that would view this?
I would have to say in here, 17 up, you know, it is pretty much an R-rated series. Although some people might not be able to handle it as well as others, it really will depend on the person. I've seen many series like this, so I would definitely recommend it for, you know, like an R-rating view audience.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So if anybody who's you know, viewed like the Game of Thrones or True Blood, which are live action shows that are based in the United States and England and whatnot, this would fit into that category. So it wouldn't be on your regular television station. It would be on like a cable station, maybe. Now, I got involved with this Gantz one way back when I just saw it on the shelf at Best Buy, and it looked pretty cool because it had a cyberpunk feel to it, I thought, based off of what I read in the jacket. It seemed science fiction-y, seemed like crazy action science fiction series, and that's why I picked it up, and sure enough, it paid off. It definitely was a science fiction-y, cyberpunk-y type of feel. Now, what was your opinion on this genre specifically? Where would you say it would fall? Would you agree with that? I mean, it's definitely science fiction, right?
Science fiction, absolutely. Horror, absolutely. It absolutely has a part. It's another genre, and some drama as well, actually. So,
yeah.
I mean, it can get actually pretty intense in certain scenes.
Yeah, it's interesting how the series goes, because there's a handful of main characters. And then a couple of them actually get killed like two-thirds to three-quarters into the 26-episode anime anyway. And the thing is that they go into the backstories. A lot of the episodes aren't even the action episodes. It seems like there's like every four episodes, it's more drama-based. And then you get into the action, crazy violence, whatever, in, like, say, the fifth and sixth episode, and then it goes back to drama for another four episodes. and continues that way throughout. And then it introduces new characters, and it actually carries these characters for 4 to 7 arcs as well before some of them necessarily pass away or die during the show. And I was actually surprised how deep the background of the characters were, the development of the characters, and the drama.
Yeah, I was very surprised there too, because honestly, when I first saw it, I was expecting a grindhouse anime, you know, like a almost like a Tarantino film, you know. Even manga did the same thing. I mean, it took a break in the monsters and stuff like that, and actually focused on the characters and what they're dealing with. And that really got me actually a little more invested than the fight scenes, because it was just, you know, you actually got to know these characters and you got attached to them as you follow them on this terrifying journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing too about some of the main characters is we see them grow too. So like you said, you know, we follow them on their journey. And you know, at the beginning we have one character that, I guess the lead or the main character, who's kind of immature and selfish and almost like teenager type. And then by the end, he is completely different. He's, you know, I don't want to say hero, because it's not like, this isn't, you know, like a Arnold Schwarzenegger, there's one guy, the hero, he's going to save the day. It's more, he becomes like someone that cares for people. He's become a man after all the things he's experienced throughout the series. And then other characters too, there's a lot of, we'll discuss a couple of them as we get into it, but a lot of the characters are very flawed, depressed, mentally ill people, in a sense, don't you think?
Yeah, oh yeah, all these characters are very flawed. I mean, even the Kato, the more kind-hearted of the group, has a serious flaw, you know. I mean, even he's not above everything else. Every character has some kind of demon or weakness they try and overcome, and sometimes they never get a chance to, you know.
Yeah, that's a good term, what you said. Every character has their demons, and they really do. There is a handful that are, you know, just happy go lucky people that just have some bad luck and land up in what happens, but a good handful of them, probably about 80% of them, I would say, all have like some sort of demon, whether it's a bad marriage, whether they're in organized crime and they don't want to be there, whether they were abused by step parents, you know, on and on and on. And we get to learn a great deal of what they are as people throughout the series. And yet we haven't even talked about the story itself, the violence, the monsters and whatnot, because like you said, this is actually a horror film. And the science fiction aspect of it is basically grounded. I don't want to call it true hard science fiction, but it isn't like space opera, right? This is more like I guess my term, cyberpunk, right?
Yeah, I think cyberpunk's more closer than a space opera, you know. Because when I hear the word space opera, I always think of Star Trek or Star Wars, you know, big journeys in space and stuff like that. I don't really think of Gantz, you know. I think you got more close to home in that term.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. Even though it is a distinct, I guess, story, if you had to group it and throw it in with something, I would probably throw it in with stuff like Blade Runner or Escape from New York for films anyway, even if it is a completely different story than either of those films. It has elements that kind of make it feel somewhat like that anyway, at least in my opinion.
Oh yeah. I definitely think Blade Runner and Escape from New York are good examples, you know. It definitely, you know, it definitely has a huge sci-fi element to it, and you know, considering that the world and the stories are written in it, it has its own rules, you know.
Right. Yeah. All right. So with that, I guess we can probably go into some of the story and some of the characters. Why don't we? Do you want to focus? Let's focus on the anime mostly, because just for the fact that it is probably the easiest to be or most accessible accessible for folks, because you know you can just pick up a DVD and watch it, and you can be done with the whole series in less than a week if you really wanted to. But yeah, there is manga, which is like you said, the graphic novel, comic book, and that's very long. And then there's actually a couple of live movies as well.
Yeah. I was lucky to actually find one of the movies. Although the other two were kind of difficult to even come across. I don't know. There is not, as you said, not as accessible as the anime. You know, because that the entire thing's available on DVD or you can rent it or something. But yeah, the movies haven't even released here, I don't think.
Yeah, they actually, believe it or not, they were, but you can't find. You have to really basically just get them through like Amazon and whatnot. Like unlike the anime, which you can just walk into any Best Buy and it's always in their anime section. We'll talk about the movies and the manga and some of the changes or the differences. But for the anime itself, why don't we talk about really the first episode, at least, or the first two episodes, because that's really what sets up the main characters and sets up the rule system, as you said. So do you want to explain, you know, what happens and some of the characters? And so at this point, I guess we can say we're going to go into spoiler territory, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So with that stated, folks, if you haven't seen it and you want to watch it before we talk about it, please go do so. You can get it at Amazon.com for sure, and you can get the whole series, GANTZ. But if you're okay, we're going to discuss at least some of it now. All right, with that stated, Abe, why don't you let folks know the basic setup for the first two episodes? I'll just start and say there's it's in the modern day, right? It's today, basically, right?
Yeah. Well, you can consider it it's into 2013, but yeah, it starts in modern day Japan, to be more precise.
Yeah, it's actually Tokyo too, right? Because we see that famous tower.
Yeah, Tokyo Tower. Yes. So.
Yeah, right. So when I said modern day, yeah, the release date of the Blu-ray, which was say the series, which was like 7 years ago, 9 years ago,
13 years ago, actually.
Basically, at least in the television show, we start out at a subway station, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting how they go about it, right? Because what they do is they have our main character and what's his name?
Kei Kuruno, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, I think that's good. And he's supposed to be, I don't know, like 16 or 17 or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds about right. He looks like he's about that age.
And he is in the subway waiting for a train, and there's this bum, right? This homeless person, I guess, is what we would call him.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. This guy's, just, you know, he's about a perfect picture of your typical bum you would see in a show or something, you know?
Where should we go from here? Basically, we have a lot of inner dialogue of characters. So the bum, you know, he's walking by, drinking, and whatever. And everybody is, like, disgusted at him, right? And so we get to see – I mean, it's definitely – the show is definitely trying to do a commentary on people, right? How people have become alienated with each other.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Like we get so many inner dialogues from the teenagers there to the old people to the businessmen. You know, everyone's got something to say about the guy.
Yeah, and it, you know what it reminded me of? A movie, Midnight Cowboy from 1969, film with John Voight and Dustin Hoffman. There's a scene in that where John Voight's character comes from Texas and he goes to the big city in New York, and they do a montage, basically. A Harry Nilsson song is played, and then they just have the John Voight character walking through New York City. And there's one scene where he stops, and there's this guy laying unconscious on the ground in a business suit, obviously needing medical attention, and he wants to help. And then he looks around, and everybody is just walking by, ignoring him in the middle, big of the streets of New York, ignoring the whole situation. So, like, almost indifference, or, you know, I got to get to work, or I got to get home to eat, or I got to go meet my girlfriend, or whatever. Everybody's just ignoring this poor person that you would think people would help. And in a sense, even though we're not talking about someone that's unconsciously on the ground, the point is that all these people in the subway are thinking, oh, this guy's, I hope he doesn't stand near me, you know, and they're all in their own world.
Yeah, you don't want to be that person who has to get involved. You don't want to con to any, you know, responsibility for anything or what if something bad happens. It's happened in, you know, in certain news reports of, you know, terrible things that happened and people just stand by and watch. It's, you know, it's actually very, you know, it's truth in television, you know.
I know. It really is. It's like people are just too busy to get involved and they don't care, almost in a sense. And I don't know if it's – and I don't think it's necessarily people are bad. It's more that people have grown to be, you know, filled with apathy or indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do we want to talk about now? What happens?
Yeah. So the bomb falls out – falls right into the tracks, and he's down. But right next to Kay is his old childhood friend Kato, and while everyone else is, you know, either refusing to help the bum or actually looking forward to seeing him get splattered, we watch as Kato starts to actually shake, you know, because everyone else doesn't, you know, want to do anything, and he's forced in a position to help him.
Right, so there's another guy. Basically, he's in the train station, our lead, and he sees someone from his childhood named, you said Kato, right?
Yeah.
And Kato goes onto the tracks to help the indigent man, basically, back onto the where everybody's standing, and he sees Kai, our lead character. And he says, ask for help. He goes, oh, my God, I haven't seen you for a while. I need your help. And so Kai almost feels, like, guilty, and so he gets down and helps. And what happens is a commuter train comes, and though this stop is usually, you know, a regular train stop where, you go to A to B to C to D throughout the city, for whatever reason, the train that's coming is one of those nonstop trains. And sure enough, all three of the folks die.
They get the bomb back up there, but they didn't give themselves enough time to get back onto the platform.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right.
Kato had the idea that he thought it would stop and they could survive by running it.
Right. Right, and of course, because the train happens to be a commuter train rather than the regular train, meaning it's not going to stop, they didn't have time to get up themselves, and so they try to at least outrun it to where there's like these steps that would lead them back to the platform, and unfortunately they get killed. So you would think, right, that's the end of the show. Our lead character died, right?
Yeah. I actually like when that happens, there was two teenage girls taking pictures of it.
Cell phones, right?
Yeah, and you know that was actually some good commentary right there too, because you know people lack, you know, people stop at disasters or something like that and start taking pictures and stuff, and it's almost like in human nature to try, just watch or get or just record.
Right, right, and we actually do get to see some other things about the news reporting later on, you know, commentary on that as well, I think. And that's the funny thing about this television show, Gantz, or the anime, or whatever you folks want to call it, is that if you look at it at the surface level, it just seems like a bloody, violent, nude-filled sci-fi, you know, extravaganza, something like maybe the original Total Recall film with Arnold Schwarzenegger, just like some crazy stuff. But if you boil all that away, we start seeing these things, like little things that you can miss. Like you said, the couple of girls taking their cell phone out and photographing the death of two kids, basically.
Yeah.
And the deaths are pretty horrendous, too. So, you know, this isn't just like they cut away. They actually show the kids get run over, and you know, I mean, again, it's just a cartoon, but you know, I mean, it's drawn as if the people are real. It's not like you know, Scooby Doo's or anything like that.
Oh yeah, it's pretty gruesome. We actually get Kai's last few seconds alive. You know, his head falls off, and he's having those last moments of consciousness where he's just thinking that his life is, that's the way it goes, and that was pretty gruesome in itself. Remember when his head lands on the platform, and he's actually thinking to himself as he's starting to fade?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like, you know, he can see his decapitated body because his brain is still consciously alive for those last few seconds. Now, let's talk about what happens next, right? Because this is where the whole story begins, right? I mean, what happens? Why don't you let the folks know?
All right, so it seems that our two characters are done. They suddenly find themselves in this apartment room along these random individuals and this huge black sphere. And no one has any idea why they're there.
Right. Yes, yeah, so are they dead or not? That's the question, right?
Yeah, they can feel their heartbeat, they can feel their breath on their hands, and some of you would think they're in heaven, you know, are confused because they can see the city outside the window.
Right, yeah, that's where we see the tower, the Tokyo Tower, right?
Yeah.
What happens is that they find out they can't leave, right? They go, there's like a balcony of this empty apartment room, I guess.
Yeah, they're not allowed to touch the window, they can't lock the door, everything's just sealed off.
Right, and what we kind of discover is that maybe is it like heaven, is it hell, is it limbo, is it some sort of alien that zapped them before they died, yet they did get decapitated and they did get squashed and whatnot.
Yeah, and each person there had their own idea of how they got there, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. Some people, what happened was they were in a car accident and they faded and suddenly they, boom, they're in this room, right?
Yeah, the one guy, you know, got hit on his way to work. Another guy was in a hospital dying of cancer. All these people had these, these last moments before they arrived here. You know, highly suggest they're dead, yet it doesn't feel that way.
Right, exactly. And this is where we meet a third important character, as well as what I guess Gantz is. At least we don't really know what Gantz is, but we actually get a somewhat of an idea. So the third character we meet is a girl, right?
Yeah, Kishimoto.
Right, and we've discovered that she actually we see her appear, and you know, it's like a digibit appearance in a sense, where it's not like a Star Trek beam me up appearance, but it's like digital.
They're transported like piece by piece, like, you know, right from the feet up.
Right, and we discover that her last moment of remembering is she had cut her wrist. Right, she was suicidal.
Yeah, she killed her because they determined that because they touched her wrist, they found some blood on there with no wounds there.
Right, exactly, and so she's like third main character, and she's pretty good looking, but she is definitely someone that's damaged in a sense. That's definitely has their demons. Obviously, if she tried to commit suicide in a bathtub, cutting her wrists, obviously she has some issues that she needed to work out, and when she dies, or drifts, or whatever, she appears in this room as well. And the thing we do see here is this giant black ball, right?
Yeah.
And what is it? I mean, we don't... I know the manga, meaning the graphic novel, that actually eventually explains more.
Yeah. You know, reading it, it reveals... I learned what it is. But when I watched the, you know, the anime, it gave me only a very vague idea.
Right. And so what is Gantz? What is it in the anime?
And the anime, it seems to be a sentient computer controlled by an actual what seems to be a human being within inside the machine that is responsible is tasked with bringing people who have died and giving them missions in order to control the alien immigrants. Literal aliens.
Right, right, exactly. So it's, like you said, it's a basically this giant ball, black ball, like an eight ball, but nothing on it. It's just completely black. And eventually it opens up, and at parts of it there's computer screens that do appear. But inside, there, like you said, there's a person, a man, and that person seems to be unconscious and connected to the computer. So the brain, it's almost like a half computer, half, I guess, biological creation and somewhat or something like that. I don't know really how to explain it.
Yeah, it's difficult to put in words. You literally have to see it. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, it's like a cyborg, but it doesn't move. It just sits there. And when it moves, it's just because it opens up or it sends something out to the people to pick up or whatnot. But it doesn't. It's not like a walking, talking type of thing.
No, it's completely motionless. And inside, aside from the humanoid inside, are an arsenal of black suits and weapons.
Right, right. And that's the thing that's interesting too, because first off, you said that. What happened is this giant ball, Gantz, basically brings recently deceased people and re-digitizes them into this room and then has them go out and control, as you said, extraterrestrials that happen to be among us that we don't know about.
Yeah, and when we're first sent out here, I mean, really, it's weird when the characters get first sent out there. It feels almost completely surreal. I mean, another important character actually within the room we forgot to mention, Nishi, this black haired young man, the eighth grader.
Right. Yes, and we discover that this guy is. Basically, he's been there for a while, right?
Oh yeah, he's been playing this game for some time. But he reveals almost like barely anything to our characters here. And really, when we're first sent out in this first alien hunt, he says it's a game show. It's to the other players.
Yeah, that's a good point, because first off, this kid here, I don't know if he's a sociopath and he just doesn't have any conscience, or if he's just become so desensitized because he's been stuck in this psychical, quote unquote, game for who knows how long, and he's just become the way he is. But you're right. What happens is that this ball, Gantz, this computer, sends off everybody that it has collected. So it's usually anywhere between, I don't know, 8 to 16 people at one time that it collects from the recently dead. So, it sounds a little supernatural. But the enemy, based off of how the people come, it's almost like they're digitized. So it is kind of science fiction-y, even though it sounds more supernatural type. But either way, it then has these folks put on these special suits and use these special weapons, and it de-digitizes them and sends them out into the streets of Japan in almost like an alternate dimension, right? Because the aliens, even though they're among us, they're not actually like walking around and look like people, right? I mean, we don't see them. The regular people that haven't been digitized or quote-unquote dead and then become digitized, they don't actually see these aliens, right?
Yeah, it's really weird. Not only can the civilians or anyone near there can't see the aliens, but they can't see our characters either. I mean, it's like they're in the actual world, but they're either cloaked or something's blocking out the sight of everyone else. Like no one can sense them, hear them, or anything. Though they can feel them. But as you said, I almost feel like a parallel dimension in a way. But they're in their own world.
Yeah, because you're right. That's the thing, is that even though our lead characters are walking around these industrial areas of Tokyo or whatever, if people happen to come by, though they can't see them, you're right, they could mistakenly bump into these quote-unquote invisible people. But they can't hear them or see them. Only our leads can see the real world, but the real world can't see them. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so it is interesting how it works. There's some things that may be confusing unless you watch the show, but I don't know if they're even explained. It's just part of the rule system, in a sense.
Yeah, essentially, it's when you have to, pretty much accept that there's some kind of technology in Act that is preventing the outside world from interfering with these hunts.
Right. So what happens is this new character they meet, like you said, what was his name again?
Nishi.
Yeah, yeah. What is it again?
Nishi.
Yeah. He basically explains that what happens, and he's been doing this many times, we discover, is that Gant sends them out to do these alien hunts, and depending on how many aliens you kill, you get raided by Gant, the computer, basically. And after you hit a certain amount of points, you have a couple of options, but the main one is that you can go home free, basically. But your mind is wiped out, so you don't remember any of it, and you basically pick up prior to your death. But after each hunt, assuming you don't get enough points, you are then sent back. Is it to your, I guess, back to the world you were in before you died?
You pretty much are allowed to go back home. The thing is, you're always on call by Gans. You know, whenever another hunt's going to happen, he's allowed to call you back to the room.
Right, right. And there's a couple of interesting things, too. This Nishi guy talks about how sometimes Gantz has computer hiccups, in a sense. So when it sends you back to the world right before you were killed or you suicided or you died of natural causes, you are then back in your real world life. But what we find out is for the girl, the character that she suicided, she actually, there's a double of her out there, right?
Yeah. Apparently she bungled the suicide and the doctors were able to save her. But at the same time, she was called to the room.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. So Gantz has redigitized or recreated her, but the real version of her never died. And so when she gets sent back after the initial hunt of aliens, and when the hunt's over, what happens is that she can't go home because there's a second one of her. And so, yeah, so there's some problems, things like that. Now, what do you want to talk about? Obviously, there's some various commentary things they discuss here. I mean, we see our main characters and who they are. Let's first talk about Cat, I guess, right? What, that's his name, Cat? Katsu or something?
You mean the Kato?
Yeah, Kato, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
We learned things about him where he seems like a natural leader, but he actually thinks the true lead of the show is it should be the boss, because when they were kids, he used to follow them around and whatnot, and he has his own problems that are related to the real world, and the real world is that I guess they're orphans, right? Him and his brother.
Yeah, they lost their parents and live with this foster family.
Yeah, exactly. And they are basically treated terribly. They're treated like slaves almost, right?
Oh yeah, they're constantly abused to the point that Kato wants to try to work to pay for an apartment for the two of them so they can get away from it.
Right, exactly. And eventually, we see scenes where this foster aunt basically is beating up his little brother, you know, true violent abuse to his little brother. And then finally, at one point, he decides to fight back, and he says, if you ever touch my brother again, you know, you're in trouble. And then at that point, they're basically thrown out onto the street, and they have to find an apartment. And again, we're talking about people that are young, who don't have much money, who have their own issues because, you know, their parents have passed, have been killed, and they've had a pretty hard life.
Yeah, you know, aside from, Kishimoto, who's, you know, literally had her life stolen by the actual, who in a way was copied. I mean, these two kids have it so bad. I mean, some of those things are actually pretty hard to watch in a way than the blood and gore.
Yeah, I would say you're right, because we have other peripheral characters. We have like a guy that's in the Yakuza, which is basically the Japanese mob that has been a terrible father to his baby, terrible husband to his wife, and I mean a lot of it he's created himself, but the characters are fairly I guess what you would call sentimental, even if a lot of it is brought on to themselves, or at least the show tries to put a unbiased look at these characters, a lot of the quote-unquote bad characters, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there are some of our characters who are essentially just so nasty that they're pretty much put there to be torn apart by the next alien, while others are more flawed and more complex than, you know, the usual character. I mean, you know, as much as like Kay, our protagonist is, a horny teenager, he still, you notice that he still has some issues that he's dealing with as well, you know. Every character has some kind of baggage that they try to deal with, and that seems in the anime takes more. More has more focus than any of the battles and stuff, you know?
What we were discussing before our break was the fact that the main character, Kai Kuronono, he had some issues too, but nothing, I guess, in the sense that some of the other characters have, right?
Oh no, he had some some problems, but nothing compared to the other characters. You know, some of the side characters, you know, have it so much worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Discussed his old friend from childhood, Kato. Has his parents that had died, and he's living with. Basically, he's basically become the father of his little brother, and they're both under 18, so they're still living you know, hand into mouth. And as a result, like you said, they had to move in with a foster family who's very abusive. And then, of course, the girl, her name is,
Kishimoto.
What is it again?
Kishimoto?
Yeah, and she's the one that obviously had problems to the point where she suicided. Now, did you get an idea exactly why she attempted to kill herself?
What I found out was because her mother had massive expectations for her. Like, you know, one of the common problems in Japanese schools and parent and families is that they put so much weight on their kids. And the mother wanted Kishimoto to be high up in the grades and have all these great achievements, and it started becoming too much for her.
And didn't she have like a sister too, right? So it's almost like she's being compared to the sister as well, right?
As I remember correctly, yeah. It became all too much for her that she finally broke down and tried to take her own life.
Now, you know, this is a good example of teenage angst or young people trying to adjust in, you know, the modern world and whatnot. So you could say, you know, poor little girl, you know, what's her problem, whatever. But again, a lot of things that the author of the series is trying to say, I'm guessing, this is just my assumption, is that he's trying to make a commentary on not only, like you said, Japanese society and how the parents are with their children or whatnot, but just the stress that teenagers feel in the modern world, right?
Yeah, I mean, when it gets to that age, you know, so much is expected of them, you know, and it's a lot more difficult in Japanese culture because, you know, trying to have the best grades and make something part of yourself is something that a lot of them try to live up to or are expected to live up to, and sometimes they can't do so. Some of them have their limits, and some just have other plans for themselves. But you know, their families or society want just put so much weight on their shoulders that it sometimes it just becomes way too much. You know, it became such a problem that it became parody sometimes.
Right, and the thing is too is that we have. The girl, she's really good looking, and she's not stupid. It's just that, you know, she may just not be as successful as her sister, or she is just, you know, average intelligence or whatever. And so the unrealistic goals that the parents put on her are enough to, yeah, you know, and if you're already, I wouldn't say a weak-minded person, but I guess a moody or a low self-esteem person in the first place, you know, just little things like that can eventually build up and really beat you down.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed when I was reading it that, you know, she tried her best, but, you know, even the slightest bit of failure, even a slightly low grade to the mother is, you know, unacceptable. You know, it becomes so much that, you know, she can't be perfect like her mother wants her to be. And the idea of perfection or trying to be above everyone else is not easy. And some people just can't do so. You know, some people have their limits. And, you know, she didn't want to be stuck living in the shadow of her sister or living for her mother, you know?
You're right, exactly. So yeah, I mean, she's her own distinct person, but you know, she's trying to live someone else's life, someone else's goals, and you know, that's why she is, I guess, the melancholy person that she appears to be on the show, with low self-esteem and whatnot. Okay, now we've pretty much explained the setup, the game, some of the main characters, what goes on. And basically, the general idea. But what did you think about the show itself? And what would you have to say first off about, I guess, anything within the 26 episodes of at least the anime? Anyway.
Yeah. I felt in a visuals standpoint, it was really strong in its animation. You know, it looked really sharp. Sound was good. The production was really nice. Although in the dub is kind of a hit and miss for me, you know.
Now, yeah, explain the dub, because obviously this is a Japanese show, and what a lot of the animes is, I know, ones that they are that are picked up by American production companies, they will hire English-speaking folk to do their own version of the language. So in other words, that instead of having Japanese language with subtitles, you can actually watch the cartoon in, say, all English. And yeah. And a lot of times it works really well. But, yeah, in some points, I guess you're right. You said you had some issues with certain parts. But all in all, would it be okay to listen to it in the English language, or is it better, do you think, to go with the Japanese language with subtitles?
In my opinion, if you can get on DVD, I'm sure there's the option to try both of them and see which one works for you. You can also even do so online. The series is actually available on certain sites, and you can try both of them out. I mean, I'm not saying the dub is, you know, horrid, but, you know, certain characters can sound a little off, but, you know, I'm guessing that the company, whoever picked it up, could not get any really big names in the English dub department, and they had to try, you know, consider the content of the series, and, you know, took who they felt would work the best in the role. I mean, overall, it was good, but, you know, as I said, it's going to be a mixed bag for, you know, the viewer. It's going to vary from person to person.
Now, let's discuss some of the, I guess, the quote-unquote, the game episodes. So, like we said, there's a lot of things about the in-between the game episodes. So there's like 26 episodes, and there are four game episodes, or I should say four games, with about eight of the episodes, you know, two per game or two or three per game. But the rest are just the backstory and whatnot. Now, the game episodes, again, the game is where the characters are digitized out of this like purgatory room in some building, unnamed building in Japan, in Tokyo, and are then put out onto the street with various weapons and equipment to fight space aliens or at least some sort of weird creatures. Because the biggest set piece is the third alien set, which is in, I guess, season two, because, again, there's 26 episodes, 13 episodes per season. And there is, in the second season, not only these monsters that aren't, I don't know if they're real aliens because they're like inanimate objects that turn alive, but there's also the sociopaths, where basically these two kids that go around basically hunting indigent people, and they're really bad people. Now, what would you call? Let's explain a little of this. What are they, like statues or something that are become alive or possessed by aliens?
Oh yeah, the Buddhist temple of Hunt. Yeah, it seemed that the aliens might have been using the Buddha, the statues as maybe like a shell, perhaps. That's because, you know, when they're hurt, you see the organic parts of it, the blood and bone and stuff like that. I think that's what they were trying to do. They were just using them to hide among society.
So almost like gargoyles, maybe?
Yeah, kind of like gargoyles. It was one of the weirder episodes, you know, because it was different from the previous two. Which I started reading it, I mean, it was really cool, but I was like, you know, how does it work? I mean, who exactly, what kind of race of aliens decided to inhabit the Buddhist statues in this temple? But, you know, as you said, I thought they would just use them as shells, like, you know, say gargoyles, to just hide, you know, amongst people so no one can figure them out.
Now, the reason I'm bringing this one out is because these episodes in the series with these gargoyle-type statue-type creatures, that's where a lot of the most blood and guts happens, right? Because, I mean, first off, we have these two kids that basically go around beating up indigent people or homeless people with baseball bats, to, you know, and they kill them. They're just really bad, bad kids. And they get killed or are about to get killed and then are digitized and brought into Gantz's world. And then we have like these gargoyle monsters that are really dangerous in a sense because they literally just slaughter people. One of them is actually the size of a house, I guess, because it's, I don't know, like almost like a big statue or something. But, what is it?
Like a colossus, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect term, colossus. Now, what do you think these episodes were trying to say? Because they have major characters get killed. I guess we don't really have to go into those unless you want to. But
in the first mission was pretty much introducing the hunt. The second one was, you know, showing when a certain character bites dust, just to show just how dangerous these hunts can be. But this hunt in particular was just trying to show that, you know, no one is safe in this series. You know, that anyone could die at any moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that the quote unquote good people, even if they're flawed, and the bad people, no one is spared in the show. I mean, almost every character could go, and even main characters too. So I know that's what a lot of folks say about the television show The Walking Dead. Like, you just don't know who's going to get killed, and there's really big characters. Same with the Game of Thrones. Here it's the same way, right?
Yeah, well, especially Game of Thrones. I mean, because in Game of Thrones, for example, just doesn't really focus on one person, or at least or three, or you know, or two at most, but just a whole bunch of people whose point of views you see through, and you honestly don't know, you know, who's going to come on top or who's going to die, and it makes it that much more, you know, unpredictable. And Gantz is kind of the same way, because this hunt just show you that, you know, from this, you know, from here on, you know, you don't know how it's going to turn out.
True. Yeah. And again, as we discussed at the beginning of this episode, it is pretty violent, pretty gruesome. Now, so let's discuss some of the manga, because you said you read, and on the this is the Facebook group, because a lot of folks, even though this is their introduction or possibly their introduction to you on Dark Discussions podcast, you are pretty active on the Dark Discussions podcast forum group on Facebook, and you actually said on it that you blew through all. How many episodes was the manga?
There was 37 volumes and total of 383 chapters.
Wow. Okay. And I'm not familiar with the manga that much because I just haven't had the opportunity to really get into it or read it. So I don't know too much about what really happens because I know that it goes into more detail and it actually explains what Gantz is all about that the anime does not show. And the thing is that I did a little research by going to, you know, Wikipedia and various online websites that talk about the series itself. Because if you do search for Gantz, you're going to find, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of websites because it has a large cult following. What did you learn about Gantz, what Gantz is, and whatnot?
Okay, since we're going to spoil territory, what I found out is that Gantz is not just one sphere. He is many spheres that are scattered throughout the world in order to control not just Tokyo but the entire planet of aliens coming to our world. Every city, every country has their own teams, their own hunting groups that monitor them. And the code for the technology in these spheres and the weapons was actually through a millionaire's daughter who somehow a savant. Her daughter was a savant. Was able to get codes from aliens from far away, and they use these codes to create the weapons and Gantz and everything like that. And That's what I found out. Like, you know, I honestly thought it was just one Gantz, but it turns out to be this. There's a whole organization surrounding these spheres.
Now, you said the millionaire and his daughter, who's an idiot savant, was able to get codes or find some codes somehow. Now, is it a government organization? Because originally in the anime, they don't know if it's supernatural, if Gantz is an alien himself, if it's a government conspiracy, if it is just something independent is from any government or any quote unquote god. But what is it? Is it run by the government?
It's like a corporation, organization. As I said, that there are different teams, but there's a small group of individuals who run the entire show, who control all the teams and stuff like that in case they're needed for anything big.
So is it like Men in Black in a sense, where it's a hidden organization that knows about these aliens and is trying to get rid of these aliens, but unlike those movies, the Men in Black movies, it's obviously not comedic by any means.
In ways like the Men in Black, but there's no real choice involved in it. If you have to be called in for a large scale mission, you're going to be called into it. And we did not mention that as well. You have no say whether to do so or not because of the little implants in the head, remember?
Right, yeah. What happens is if you decide you don't want to do it, or if you say, the hell with this, I'm just going home and not going to go searching for these aliens, if you leave a certain quadrant of the city that has been where these aliens are located, you're right, it's like a little buzzer that goes off and your head blows off, right? You die.
Yeah. They're pretty much forced to become part of this organization, these hunting groups, and they literally have to fight for their freedom just so they don't have to be a part of it anymore. And that's why the memories are erased in order to keep that secret, from the public.
Right, exactly.
Keep in mind, too, if you reveal any of Gantz's technology, or you tell anyone about Gantz who's not involved in the hunts, you get killed as well.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing is that the reason Gantz has all this power over you is because it has basically computerized you in a sense, because you're a biological creation from a computer, because you're recovering, you're coming back from the dead or whatnot. Let me ask you this: if the manga explains any of this, Gantz chooses people that die to do this, and so you figure, okay, if a person's dead, then they can take a person that's dead and use them to basically hunt. But the thing is during the non-hunting things, it puts the people back into place. So why does it choose dead people? Does it actually explain that, or is that very vague even in the manga?
It was kind of vague, but I guess it chose them because it'd be much easier than trying to just beam up random people who are actually living their daily lives, instead of beaming up some guy who's literally just in his office one day into the room. Instead, choose people who may not come back or won't be missed or something like that. It was I always that me scratch my head, but I guess because these people had died, it'd be just easier for Gantz or the spheres in general to get a hold of these individual people. That was just one of the parts that confused me. I mean, dead people in general, I don't understand why.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. It's like you said, they're basically what it is Gantz takes dead people and is giving these people, quote unquote, a second chance with life, in a sense. Even though they have to go out and they have to basically go to war, in a sense. If they hit a certain point, meaning they get a number of points by killing these aliens, that's an incentive that, okay, you can go back to your normal life as if nothing happened and whatnot. So, I mean, that's somewhat of a reason, I guess, but you're right. It is fairly vague on why, you know, dead people are taken. But again, you know, dead people are also less likely to be missed, too.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of the manga compared to the anime? Obviously, the anime is much shorter, and it's live action cartoon, so it's, you can argue that, you know, that's a lot of people like movies more than reading or vice versa, depending on what floats your boat.
It does. There are some really great moments after a certain point in the anime. Like, there is one character who actually wants to go back to the room, who's obsessed with playing the game, more so than even Nishi. To the point he actually disguises himself and goes on a killing spree so he can get more players into the room.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then there's also new characters like this wandering martial artist who's trying to find the strongest fighter, and even some pair of psychics as well. So new characters come to the scene, and there are some pretty intense battles aside from the massacre. One of the biggest fights is actually against a horde of creatures from Japanese mythology who are actually aliens. And there's just so many things in the manga that were so cool. I would have liked to see those brought into the anime. But as it turned out, the anime overtook the manga before it can catch up to that point. But the final six episodes are actually the plot line is very similar to something that actually occurs in the manga.
Oh, really? Because the last six episodes of the anime were done because the manga at the time had been finished and they had caught up to the manga. And so now you had the folks that had made the anime say, "How do we end this?" So they had to go out and make up their own storyline. So the last six episodes aren't necessarily directly pulled from the manga. So yeah. Diverges a little bit because of that. But you said that there were some similarities from those six episodes to the manga itself?
Yeah, because during this ninth volume, Kay gets a girlfriend named Tay, and she becomes a really big moral support for him, and it also becomes part of his character development. He actually matures as a person because of her. But during one of the hunts, as she's taking pictures, she actually takes pictures of one of the hunters, and actually gets caught on the camera. And Gantz doesn't want that to happen. Anything that gets caught in camera or anything like that could jeopardize the secrecy of the organization, the hunts and everything. So Gantz orders the hunters to kill his girlfriend. And soon the hunters are divided between people who try and protect Tay and those who are trying to kill her, which is very similar to how the last six episodes would work, but it was Kay in that sense.
Right. Now, what was your opinion of the ending of the anime? Because at the 26 episodes, they have their coda at the end. And reading online, a lot of folks were somewhat disappointed with the ending, while other folks thought it was fantastic because of you can read things into it, and it fell more into some of the backstory and the commentary that I guess the writers/directors are trying to say about the world itself. What did you think of the ending? Because it is an interesting coda.
Yeah, I understand the positives and negatives. I felt that the ending had strengths because it added to that very, ambiguous future the characters were facing when they dealt with the situations, and how hopeless the situation seems, and also the mystery of the whole thing. At the same time, though, we always want that big, great finale, and we want some kind of closure and to a show or something. So I felt very conflicted over it. I wasn't angry. I wasn't, but I was feeling a little like there are things that could have been done and things that could, that, were just fine,
Yeah, I think if there were any complaints, the main complaints were it was left ambiguous.
Yeah, very ambiguous.
Yeah, and again, though, at the time that the anime was created, even the creator of the whole comic book, he hadn't even finished it yet. So, I mean, it was open-ended anyway at the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, I haven't done any real research on why they, you know, I mean, again, it's one of the main animes that are still printed over and over and over. Again, most likely because of its shock value, and you even mentioned the word grindhouse at one point. And again, I still have to say that that's the upper level. And if you take all that away, it obviously is much bigger than that. I mean, based off of some of the things that we've discussed. But with its continued popularity, most likely due to its excessive violence, why don't you think they have not continued with it? Because even though, you know, they had their own coder and they had their last six episodes and whatnot, this could have...
I'm very curious about that too. It could be maybe they there's someone has not picked it up again to start to you know get things going again. It's you know because you know it's usually a studio has to set up a new schedule slip in for an anime before they can continue it. I was very curious about that too because you know it's been several years since it came out. I mean it's been 6-7 years now, and I don't know why. I mean, because as I said, the anime, the production values of the show were very good, you know. And I think, and there were some fantastic scenes later in the series that would look great if it was brought to the screen. So I don't know. You know, maybe someday we'll actually get a chance to see it. Maybe not. It's in the air, really.
And it is curious too, because there's two things. One, like you said, the manga actually just ended this year, just a month or two ago. So it's had a very long run. It had a very popular run, and it's still and it's modern in a sense because again. 2013. They were still creating brand new comic books of it, episodes, chapters of it, up to just a couple of months ago. And the second thing is then they made the two live action films, and I've actually seen both of them. And believe it or not, you can get them on Amazon. And Jason of Horrorphilia, he actually had the films as some of the best science fiction and horror films he's seen in the past 5 years. And these films were only produced just a couple of years ago. So 2011, they were made in two films, each about 2 hours each. One was released, and they released the second one a couple of months later. And they actually got really good reviews by a number of American magazines and newspapers. And I'm not just talking about horror or anime magazines and newspapers, but main newspapers like, you know, the New York Times, the USA Today and whatnot. And they were very popular in Japan, and they got a huge cult following here in the United States because when they released, you know, this over-the-top craziness in live action where folks who love Japanese cinema, and there's a lot of folks in the United States who love Japanese cinema, wanted to see it. And they actually even had short runs in theaters, too. So it is curious that they haven't gone back to make more seasons of the anime for the fact that the show still has had a popularity, specifically in Japan, up to 2013.
Yeah. You know, I actually managed to see the first film. And, you know, like the anime, I mean, the production, everything about the movie was just phenomenal. I mean, it was just a sharp movie. You know, the acting was good. The specs were pretty awesome. The drama was genuine. You know, I haven't seen the second movie, you know, but, you know, I would like to. I'd probably seek it out on Amazon when I can. Maybe if the films are gaining enough of attention of the general audience, then maybe they can reboot the anime for another shot, you know, another go.
Oh, that's true. And the second film, actually, I thought was even better than the first. So if you like the first, you'll definitely like the second. The thing, too, about the cartoons, the anime itself, is, like you said, you can reboot it or you could pick it up from the original artist and whatnot, because again, it was just like The Simpsons, the characters never age, right? So you, it's not like you have an actor that is older now and it's like, oh no, no, we can't use, you know, William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy to play, you know, the characters in Star Trek anymore because they're too old now. In this here, you can, you know, not have to worry about such a thing.
No.
And so that's pretty cool. So yeah, you're right. They could reboot it. They could just pick up from a few years ago, because like you said, the production values were really good back then anyway, and it is animation. And in animation, you know, you can pretty much do anything versus live action special effects. And even the live action movies, they actually, it was unbelievable how well they were able to bring this world to two-hour films. But yeah, I mean, it's all in all pretty good. So I don't know if you have any further things to say about Gantz. What would you want to say about it, about the anime itself specifically? Because I think that's probably what most folks may, or even the live action films, to be honest. But I would recommend the anime just for the fact that it's longer.
I would definitely recommend it because it's one of the things you have to see. You know, it has such a reputation that you know if you love strange things or just anything popular. How should I describe it? It's kind of like one of those shocking films like Cannibal Holocaust. You know, people say you must see it. You know, as gruesome as it is, as shocking as it is, it's something you have to see. You know, because it has such a reputation. You know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not as controversial by any means like Cannibal Holocaust, but you're right. It has a reputation because it was a true grindhouse type of show with a lot of violence and whatnot, and it was a cartoon, so that was interesting. Well done cartoon, well drawn, but it has a really interesting backstory of the characters, because it goes really deep into the characters.
Oh yeah, and that is another thing too. I mean, because honestly, you know, if one person might just look at it and see it's just a blood fest, but there's just so much more to it. You know, I mean, the characters, you know, are well developed. There's great drama, and you know, you become invested in what's happening there. There's some great mystery there too. You know, I mean, that's why I also suggest people should pick up the manga as well, because there's a lot more behind, you know, there if they are curious about learning more about the world and some of the strange mysteries, you know, of the universe.
Right, exactly. Because I mean, if it is like you said, all those chapters and all those books, I mean, yeah, there's so much you can learn that the anime itself doesn't talk about. Now, for the anime itself, you can get it for around $30 on like 7 DVDs, and that's not too bad, because we're talking 26 episodes and for $30. And then the two movies, you can get them on Blu-ray or DVD, and they're both, you know, like $15 a piece. And then the mangas, they're a little more difficult to find. They do have a number of them on Amazon, but a number of them are out of print too. So yes, it's a little more of a pain in the ass. But, you know, the typical price for the ones that are still in print are, you know, anything that you would see on for a trade paperback anywhere, you know, like the same price as like a Walking Dead episode or something like that, you would find at Barnes & Noble or whatnot. Now, for the cultural differences, well, there is a lot of crude things in it, you know, like immature behavior, because we're talking, some of the characters are young teenage boys, so that could make people roll their eyes every so often. Obviously, people who don't like violence, you shouldn't watch this. And also those folks who love science fiction, or cyberpunk science fiction for sure, they should definitely check it out. But the question is, can those folks who can't get over the cultural differences, would they like this? Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, the crude humor, and I guess not even humor, it's just crude behavior of the lead character specifically every so often can kind of maybe turn people off a bit. But, you know, I mean, that's just how the character is. And it's not, like, ridiculous. It's just crude. In other words, it's a typical 17-year-old kid who and how he would act, I guess.
Yeah, he deviates from your typical, protagonist, what we see in a main character is kind of warped into a character that we would look at and, down the street and kind of roll our eyes at,
Yeah, exactly. He's definitely an anti-hero, at least at the beginning, but he's not a true scumbag by any means. And then his behavior can be irritating at points, but he grows as a character through the series. So I liked how you explained how he was. He's not like your typical, quote unquote, hero. And so he's more gray in a sense, but gray because of being a selfish teenager rather than being a good or evil.
And it's interesting that his friend Kato embodies more of those values that we see in a protagonist. Yeah, he himself has a lot of, demons that he deals with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because that's the thing about his character, too, his friend Kato, or his childhood friend Kato, is that he looks like he's, quote-unquote, a golden boy or a very nice kid and whatnot throughout the first episode. But we find out when he goes back into his real life, the life where he lives with his foster family and he's in high school, he's actually a pretty violent person. So in the game, and when he's out in the Gantz world, he's a very, very pacifist person. Yet in the real world, he's a very angry person because of the way he's been treated.
He's bawling all the anger and frustration that he's had to hold in for so long. And even when he's fighting monsters and stuff, he can't even release it. It took that bully in that one episode to just suddenly let it all out one day.
Yeah, that's true. Because there's a point where has the gun, and he's like, why am I even fighting these aliens? I have nothing against these people. They're not doing anything to me. These creatures aren't hurting me. We're actually being the violent ones, being humans, being the violent ones, because they're the ones that are going over to wipe out these aliens from this Earth. And it's never explained whether or not the aliens are there to invade or if they just happen to be there as refugees or whatnot. So at points when they first meet a lot of the aliens are harmless. They're just ignoring them. Like, they're indifferent to the hunters because they don't consider the hunters prey or monsters. They just consider the hunters, just like we would consider squirrels in the, our backyard.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that the humans then attack these aliens, and then we have this big war because the aliens then obviously fight back. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting how it works because, now just talking it out, it's, there's another thing. It's like human nature.
And when he's fighting the aliens, he always uses the transport gun. You notice that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's
different guns. There's one that's like a crazy beam that causes the aliens to explode, and there's another one that transports them, beams them up to wherever Dr. Planner is somewhere. And Kato, being the pacifist, will always use that gun because he always tries to not kill anyone, even if it's trying to kill him.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Because, I guess what it is that he was probably, generally, just a normal person like anybody. But then in the real world, he's been beaten up and his parents have been killed and, the world has just been bad to him. And then what we see in the Gantz world, when he is transferred to the Gantz world, he's almost trying to change his ways in a sense or remake himself.
Yeah. He's trying not to, the world and even the horrors he's faced and just destroy me because he's got to keep going for his brother. That's what all he wants to do is get back to his brother, and it was very interesting, just to imagine yourself in that position, but how
even when like in one episode, the second the first hunt, for example, you know how emotional he became when facing the father of the first alien. Remember that?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Because again, this is where it comes to, like I said, where he doesn't even want to kill anybody, and then he goes up to the alien, the father alien, because there's a small alien, and they kill it, or some of the people in the Gantz world kill it. He then goes up to the father alien, because we find out that the alien that Gantz really wanted to kill was this really bad thing, you know, big guy. And he goes up to the guy, the monster, and he goes, I understand how you feel, you know, whatever. And he's trying to reason with this monster, basically, because this kid is really, really a damaged person.
Yeah. I mean, even when he had nothing to do with it, he put all the responsibility on his shoulders. Even after all those who did actually were responsible for killing the child alien were dead.
Right. Exactly. And so again, it would be interesting to read like some sort of little thing by the author of the series and see what he was trying to say, because there's a lot of things that really are said in this series, and not just the grindhouse, violent, cyberpunk insanity that we see, but really the commentary of what he's trying to say about, I guess, Japanese society, or maybe even human nature, and non-specific to any society.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I don't know. Any further things you wanted to say, or we pretty much wrapped up, or what?
I would just say, if everyone go check out Gantz when you can, you know, whether it's on DVD or manga, or you know the movies, you know, definitely go check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Absolutely, definitely a damn good show. Not just for the action pack. Suspense, or if you like crazy blood and gore and blood and boobs or whatever. I mean, it's much more to it than that, because it has that cyberpunk feel. It obviously isn't a masterpiece in the sense that Blade Runner is, but it definitely has a lot of things to say, similar to what Blade Runner tries to say in that movie. So, I guess that's it. That's Gantz. Gantz is a good show, a high recommend by me, and it appears you as well, right, Abe?
Absolutely.
Very good. All right, now, first off, a couple of things to, once more, the first off, iTunes reviews, we're looking for them. Lastly, with you, Abe, what was that, a blog that you do once more?
A realer movie reviewer.
Okay, and folks can find that right on the internet, right?
Yep, absolutely. I'll spell out for anyone who might need to type it down. Reeler is spelled R-E-E-L-E-R and movie reviewer. You just type it in. You'll definitely come across it. It'll definitely stand out.
Right. And also, if people go to Dark Discussions Podcast, search for that on Facebook. You can join the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, which is the forum for our podcast. And in that forum, Abe, you're an active member, and you do every so often post links to your blog as well when you put up new episodes and articles and whatnot, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can search for Abe over there, too, on Dark Discussions Podcast on Facebook. So just search for Dark Discussions Podcast on Facebook. Here, it's www.darkdiscussions.com. We're on the web. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com. Like I said, the Facebook group, or on Twitter and whatnot, where you can listen to us on Stitcher. And at the bottom of every page of www.darkdiscussions.com, you will find a link to all those things. So, Abe, thanks for joining us. Hopefully you can join us more often for other reviews of various science fiction, horror, animes, and maybe join us for a couple of movies here and there, too.
Absolutely. I'd be glad.
All right. Fantastic. So with that stated, everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week with a new episode.
listen, yeah. People put your guns on mass, don't let them run back. Have Sigma what the left low gun shop. One new sound source, survivor. King Kong, tomboy, cons, big tiny hero. Shield, title, tone, I'm out of rope. Oh, man, that man, I go attack, but I'm under. What's the fun of the man, and he won't bang, don't knock, go, gun, gun, gun. One time, for your mind, he can kill on the world.
Start.
Ring, ring, hop, hop, super gun shooter. No boy can this, we hop, that's a like a free, free, down, down. He could let him, I got free. Oh, please, had a guy, but please, so. Same, same, chop, chop, king of gun, crap, crap. Master, you don't say that, it's what danceable. Rock, 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 yo, body, body. You being a somebody, you being stop the same thing. Hey, coming out, coming on me, the sheriff in order that she got in Kashin to see. Kit to Riki, 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 Riki,
Layer 3 star.
Start. Yo.